Welcome to the Asbury First United Methodist Church Weekly Sermon. We hope you enjoyed this message by Stephen Cady. For more information about this podcast or other ways to connect, please visit asburyfirst.org.
On October 7th, 3 weeks ago yesterday, a coordinated and brutal attack by Hamas on Israel left nearly 1,400 Israelis dead, many of whom were civilians, many of whom were children, if reports are to be believed, many in the most horrific way possible. Over 200 hostages were taken. And while four have been released as of this moment, the fates of the rest are unknown. In response, the Israeli government declared war on Hamas, calling for its complete and utter annihilation, and began 3 weeks of aerial bombardment that has left, if reports are to be believed, more than 7,000 Palestinians dead, many of whom are civilians, many of whom are children, many in the most horrific ways possible. Nearly a million Palestinians are left without access to the basic necessities of life: food, clothing, shelter, electricity, basic medical care. And aid is being limited at the border. In other words, in just over 3 weeks, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians have been displaced. Hundreds of thousands of Israelis have been called into service, and hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people around the globe have all set their sights on that so-called Holy Land in horror. To be clear, there are geopolitical forces at work in this conflict that very few of us fully understand, even those of us who are desperately and earnestly trying. And yet, even the least informed among us, even those of us who bury our heads in the sand, turn off the news, try not to pay attention to what is happening, even those among us seem to understand that there is something qualitatively different about this moment of conflict. That while there has been conflict in this region for decades, there is something that feels different about this one. And while we, looking out our windows, cannot see the smoke, we can absolutely feel the impact. Just look around. Look at what has happened to us in the last 3 weeks. Friends, neighbors, colleagues, coworkers, students, teachers, family members have all taken sides. We have universalized the particularities of this situation, and anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim sentiment are on the rise. Threats are being called in even in our own community, and events are being canceled or moved online, all while people suffer. People suffer. Children of God, some literally children, are suffering. Jews, Palestinians, Israelis, Muslims, among others, are suffering, many of whom had nothing to do with this conflict, and most of whom want nothing more than each and every one of us wants, to be able to live fully and freely in peace. We cannot solve violence with more violence. The solution to division and injustice cannot be more division and injustice. And if the nations of our world, including our own, cannot understand that, then we as a people of faith know what we are called to do. We who follow the Prince of Peace know that maybe this is our moment to finally speak up, to remind the world that as hard as it is, there is another way. Though how we do it matters. As Methodists, we have these three rules that we try to live by. The first is to do no harm. That is, in the face of intractable situations, we are first and foremost called to not make things worse. We are called to do no harm. Because it's only when we commit to doing no harm that we can move on to those other things that we are called to do. The second and third rule, that is to do good. And the third is to attend to the holy ordinances of God, or rather practice our faith. And while I'm often accused of jumping straight to the second rule, that is to try and do good, I have found myself in the last few weeks ruminating on that first rule. What does it mean in this moment to do no harm? Maybe it starts with being willing to pause. Not forever, but at least for a moment, before we take to social media, before we take down someone else, before we take whatever we receive in the media as the actual fact, maybe it makes sense to at least for a second pause to make sure that what we're receiving is accurate. One of the challenges we've had over the last few weeks, of course, has been the misinformation that has come out. Look at that bombing or the missile strike of the hospital. How many times have we gone back and forth about what actually happened there, when the truth is, we may never know. And in the midst of that barrage of misinformation, maybe as a people of faith, our job is to simply pause. But we can't stop there, of course. Maybe if we're faced with so many things we don't know, we are asked to at least stop and consider what we do. And there are some things we do know. If we believe that where there is truth, there is God, then maybe we owe it to ourselves to just stop and consider what we know to be true in this world in which we don't fully understand the geopolitical implications of everything that is happening, in this world in which we don't always know which sources to trust. Maybe it helps to just pause and say, what is it that we do know? We know, for instance, that this conflict didn't start 3 weeks ago. That in many ways it can be traced back 7 decades to the founding of the State of Israel and the forced displacement of the Palestinian people. Or we could back up even further and look to the horrors inflicted upon our Jewish siblings when 6 million were killed, murdered during the Holocaust, and the nations around the world, including the United States, who refused to offer them safe harbor. Or back up even further to the centuries of persecution by Christians against Jews and Muslims alike that laid the foundation for the atrocities we are experiencing today. In other words, these things didn't just happen, and we know it. And to simply say, what side are you on in this moment, as if we are to choose right away which one it is, ignores the very real histories, the very real pain, and the very real suffering that has led to this moment. Hurt people, hurt people. We know this from our own lives. And Israelis and Palestinians and Jews and Muslims and many others have been hurt by each other, by us, by a system and structure of injustice that has bred more injustice. These, of course, are not the only things we know. As a people of faith, we know that anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim sentiment are sinful. They are always sinful. Not just because Jesus was Jewish or Middle Eastern or lived under a regime of oppression that is foreign occupation, though all of those are true and we could stand to remember them at this time, but because any time we whole hog sweep away an entire group of people, anytime we dismiss people for the basic fundamental part of who they are, we miss the fundamental truth of our faith. The one thing that we are called to hold on to when everything else disappears. And if you're scratching your head wondering what that one thing is, maybe you remember the scripture lesson for today. It came from the Gospel of Matthew, that gospel which is attempting to connect Jesus to his Jewish roots. We can hear it in the second part of the passage today. Seems important in this moment. And it comes, perhaps ironically, in the story when Jesus is being asked to take a side in an ancient, age-old debate. A Pharisee approaches Jesus and asks him simply, "Teacher, which law, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" It's a trick question. All the laws are supposed to be equal, and yet Jesus is a champ. And he responds almost immediately, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all of the law and the prophets." On these two commandments, love of God and love of neighbor, hang all of the law and the prophets. We hear it, of course, from Matthew's gospel, but the truth is, it's in every one of them. In Mark and Luke, it's almost the exact same formula. Love God and love neighbor, that's what we call the double love commandment. But by the time we get to the last gospel written, to John's gospel, it's pared down even further to simply one commandment. Jesus says, "I give you a new command that you love one another." Do you hear? Do you? The central truth of our faith, the one thing we are called to hold on to when everything else in our world is falling apart, is our call, is our command to love. John Wesley had three rules. Jesus had one. Love. Love God. Love your neighbor. Love one another, which sounds a lot easier than it is. How many times have we stood on this pulpit, in this pulpit, and said, "We're not talking about the cotton candy, sunshine and roses kind of love. No, this is the kind of love that makes us stand when we want to sit, go when we'd rather stay, and speak when it would be so much easier to stay silent, or maybe for people like me to stay silent when we're so used to speaking." This is a moment when the rubber meets the road and we have to ask ourselves, what does it look like to love in this moment for such a time as this? It is a love that demands that we do no harm, that we do good, and that we keep practicing our faith. It is the kind of love that asks us to not ignore the hurt of others lest they continue to hurt. It is a love that asks us to look for the suffering in the world and stand with them. People keep asking, what side should we take in this conflict? As if, as Christians, our job is to stand with Israel or with Palestine, when the truth is, as Christians, we only have one side, the side of love, which, in case you're wondering, is the side of those who suffer. It is the side of those who are experiencing injustice. It is the side of peace. That is the side we are called to be on. And it is not demarcated by any arbitrary human-drawn line or ethnicity marker or religious marker or anything else that keeps us from being in relationship with one another. Our central allegiance as Christians is not to some flag. It is to Christ, who calls us to love, who weeps at the loss of innocence, who rebukes the use of violence, and who asks us to do one thing and to do it well, to love. And if that sounds hard, the good news is we don't have to do it alone. That's why we're here. Look, people always ask, what is the value of church? And sometimes the answer is, not much. But this is a moment when we start to understand why it matters that we get together, why it matters that we gather and point each other in the right direction, because look at our world. Today, we're talking about Israel and Palestine, but let's be honest, we could be talking about yet another mass shooting, this time in Maine, and our obsession with guns. We could be talking about climate change or poverty or racism or any of the other seemingly intractable problems that we just don't know how to face. And while we might not be perfect, we know that we are somehow more perfect together than we are apart. That is, we need each other as we try and find our way out of intractable moments like this, out of the quagmire that has seemed to surround us of recent days. That is, we only get by with a little help from our friends, and sometimes we need to be held accountable, sometimes we need to be called out or called in, or just simply pointed in the right direction. That's why we're here. Look, just like you, I have watched the news of Israel and Palestine and been totally confused about what to do. We call it a holy land, but in some ways that imbues too much power to that soil. Yes, significant parts of religious history have happened there for Christians and Jews and Muslims alike. That's part of the reason there is conflict in this region. But let's be clear, God is wherever we are. That is, God is in that space between you and me, not just because God loves groups, but because God is love, which means that wherever we stand as people of faith in love, that place is holy. And looking around our world, friends, we could use many more holy places right now, and all it takes is for one of us to step forward toward one another in love. If we're scratching our heads wondering what that would look like, well, maybe our young people can lead us. When they were talking about the intractable situation in Israel and Palestine in youth group a couple of weeks ago, Mike gave them some advice that I think would be good for us to take as well, which was simply, yes, we may not know somebody directly impacted, that is, in Palestine right now or in Israel, though some of us do, but maybe we know a Jewish person or a Muslim person or somebody who has ties to Israel or Palestine, and what could we do? We could show them some love. We could reach out and find out what's happening in their life, not push ourselves upon them, but to stand next to them in love. It's worth a shot. Maybe you have even better ideas. Look, friends, I don't claim to understand this situation any better than anybody else, and I pray to God that I have not caused more harm in speaking about this today. But I do know this. It is something that if I'm uncertain about everything else in this world, it is something that I can hold on to. I know that in my faith, I am called to hold on to one thing and one thing alone. The call of Christ to love, which means standing for justice, which means standing for equity, which means standing on the side of those who are suffering. And that kind of love cannot be done with bombs and missiles and hostages and violence. And so we as a people of faith owe it to this world to call for peace, not simply an end to the present conflict, but to the injustices that caused it. And until we get to that kind of world, well, then we know what side we are to stand on. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me.
Thank you for listening to the Asbury First Weekly Sermon. If you enjoyed this message, please visit asburyfirst.org and learn more about our mission to love God and neighbor, live fully, serve all, repeat.